On this week's episode, I talk about new music from Amanda Shires. I talk about my 22-year-old Ibanez Soundgear bass. I talk about the first episode of the new season of The Venture Brothers. I talk a little bit about old episodes of Kimmy Schmidt and a touch of wrestling. All that, plus other things. You know how it goes by now, probably. And the way that it goes is I'm Derek Brink, and you are listening to Empty Checking. Hey everybody, welcome to Empty Checking, the only show that takes up more of my time than it does yours. If you like the show, you can check out the companion blog at emptychecking.blogspot.com. The show itself is hosted at soundcloud.com/emptychecking. We're searchable on iTunes and CastBox and lots of other podcast apps except for Spotify. Spotify is hard to get onto if you're a podcaster. They make it almost impossible to get on there unless you're Alex Jones, apparently. If you want to know more about me, you can go over to derekbrink.com and there's plenty of stuff to read and click on there. And if you like the music that you hear throughout the show, it's all my stuff, I wrote it, and you can have it for free by going to derekbrink.bandcamp.com. Just enter your price as zero, and you can have it for free. I don't even collect your email address. Hope everybody's doing okay. I've had a week of many setbacks and delays and things. In fact, this episode's probably going to go up a little bit late because I've got something scheduled for Thursday night. I didn't think ahead and remember that I have a show to edit, so I scheduled something for Thursday. We'll see when this goes up. It'll be before the weekend, maybe. But maybe it'll still be Thursday. I don't know. That's the future right now. I'm recording this on a Wednesday, so who can tell what's going to happen by the weekend? Something I know won't be happening by the weekend. Some of you will remember that I've gone into detail talking about how I signed up for the Star Trek Mission Crate with Loot Crate, and the first one was supposed to deliver in January, and I think it came in March, if memory serves. The second one still has not delivered. It still hasn't shipped. It's been delayed and delayed and delayed, and they're not even really saying why. The third one, of course, has been announced that it's delayed as well. The fourth one hasn't even been titled as a result. It's August. We should be four crates in, expecting our fifth, I think. And we've got one and a bunch of delays on everything that's come since. They have said most recently that it'll ship in the middle of August. Not the first time or month we've heard that as subscribers to the Mission Crate. Very disappointing. I don't know if it's on Loot Crate's end or on Star Trek's end, but I kind of think it's probably on Loot Crate's end, because Star Trek knows not to piss off nerds, frankly. So I think that probably Loot Crate is the one delaying their own product. That's sad. It bums me out as a Star Trek fan. I've actually canceled my subscription to it, but I've already paid for three crates, so I'm still anticipating to sometime. The most recent message I sent them, to which they didn't reply, was, hey, so middle of August now, maybe. You know, can you at least tell us which year? Very disappointed in Loot Crate. I'd never ordered anything through Loot Crate before. I'd never subscribed to anything through Loot Crate before. I've been a member of other crate-type services, most notably Pro Wrestling Loot, which I've talked about on the show in the past. And that was clockwork. It was smooth. It was wonderful. Loot Crate is the service that is supposed to be the standard bearer for that kind of thing, and they've been nothing but terrible in my first experience with them. So they won't be getting a second experience. Unfortunately, I'm not a fan. Very disappointed that hasn't shipped yet. It's very close to the middle of August, so if they keep this promise, then it'll ship soon. But they haven't kept their promise on the previous 8 months of subterfuge, so I have no reason to believe that it's going to ship this month either. So again, my review of the first crate was when I opened it up and got all the stuff out of it, it was worth every penny, but it's not worth the inconvenience. It's not worth the time. It's not worth the disappointment of the delays. So that's where we are. Maybe we'll have one of those to report on here before the end of the month. Maybe we won't. We probably won't. That's all I can say for sure, is that that isn't shipping. That's all I can say for sure. But otherwise, hey, you didn't come here to hear me whine about stupid nerd stuff. You came here to hear me praise stupid nerd stuff. So I'm gonna take a little bit of a musical break here. We'll play something from my previous career, or current career. I don't know. My back catalog is what I was trying to say. I don't have a previous career in music. I have an ongoing career in music. I'm still writing stuff. I got plans in the works. But we'll play something from the back catalog. So, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about other stuff that I said in the introduction a little bit ago. You understand how shows go. Here's me with a song. Some music to talk about this week, folks. We usually have music to talk about. I don't know why I'm saying that like it's a surprise. I want to start by kind of going back to an album that I talked about already that's a new release for this year. I already talked about the new Jayhawks record, Backroads and Abandoned Motels. I already talked about that, but I feel like it's worth bringing up again. Because this has been a year musically where I haven't really been looking forward to a lot of new releases. And that Jayhawks record I picked up just kind of to check in on the band, because I wasn't that happy with one of their more recent releases, and I felt like giving them another chance. And I'm glad I did. I talked about that then. It's a really good record. Here's the thing. I've kept listening to it, and I've kept listening to it, and I've kept listening to it, and I keep listening to it, and I keep going back to it, and it makes me want to listen to more of their stuff, and it's a really good record. It's gone from being a record that I was glad was a return to form for a band that I liked that I had sort of been disappointed with more recently. I was glad that it was a return to form, but I'm also... It's become more than that. It's become one of my favorite records of the year. This thing's going to be in my top five. It might be in my top three. It's a really strong, really solid release. And I just, I wanted to just heap some more praise upon it and more emphatically state that it's a really good record and you should really listen to it. It's one of the better ones you're going to hear this year. So that said... Since I talked about it more fully before, let's move on and just talk about one of the other best releases you're going to hear this year. And that's the new album by Amanda Shires called To the Sunset. I pre-ordered it. It came out officially last Friday, I believe. And I had pre-ordered it and ordered the vinyl. And the vinyl is going to be in the package that I ordered. Is going to be coming with a watercolor painting of one of her lyrics that I presumably she did. And, like, everything's going to be autographed, and, like, she's autographing both the record and the watercolor, and the record's also being autographed by Jason Isbell, her husband, also great musician, and also Dave Cobb. And that's cool, but I'm looking forward to all of that. The Jason Isbell autograph is actually really interesting because he was in the Drive-By Truckers when I first got into DBT. And he's the only person who's been in DBT, at least since they've been as big as they are, that whose autograph I don't have on something. There's a prior bass player that I don't either, but he's kind of the main guys in the band. He's the autograph I don't have. So it's kind of nice that it's going to be on Amanda's record. Big fan of Amanda Shires. Started listening to her stuff because I'm a Jason Isbell fan, and... a number of years ago when Isbell was touring behind the Southeastern record, which is a phenomenal record. That's one of my all-time top five records, hands down. It's kind of a late entry to that list, but it stands next to things like Quadrophenia and Neil Young's Harvest and Pink Floyd's The Wall. It's a great record on that level to me. He was on that tour and played a set in St. Louis at, I think it was Off-Broadway. My brother Dave can correct me on that if I'm wrong. I believe it was Off-Broadway. And which is kind of a strange thing in and of itself, because Off-Broadway is a relatively small room, small, muggy, standing room only room, and with a shaky balcony. And he played there, and it's flash forward to the year 2018. He's playing, he's about to release an album in October that's a live set from playing the Ryman. So he's Jason Isbell now, and you know, it's been fulfilling to watch his career kind of grow and blossom. But that set that they played at Off-Broadway was really cool, because Amanda was with him on that show. She doesn't play every show that he does. She's got her own musical commitments, obviously, and is kind of on and off the bill. She's officially a member of the band, but sometimes she's not there. It's, you know, she has violin and backing vocals and stuff. Actually, the only time I've seen Isbell with Amanda Shires on stage is that show, is the Off-Broadway show. And it was one of those things that I walked in a Jason Isbell fan, but I also kind of walked out an Amanda Shires fan, because she's just incredibly charming. Knowing nothing about what kind of songs she wrote, I knew that I wanted to check out her musical career, because she seems like a really, really fun, really charming person. And their stage presence together is really beautiful. You can see that they love each other, and it's a nice thing to watch. Like, the whole night, she was just throwing them little looks, and it wasn't a, hey, where are we in the song? It was just kind of a how you doing type of look, and he was throwing them back at her and all that stuff. And it, I later that night tweeted that I just saw the two of them on stage together, and I felt like I'd seen my generation's Johnny and June. And I tagged them both in that tweet, and they both liked it, and they were the only two people that liked it, and that's the way I like it. But yeah, I walked out of that feeling like I'd seen Johnny in June, and I wanted to hear what Amanda Shires' solo career was like. So I've started buying her stuff. My Piece of Land, the record that preceded this one, is just a phenomenal record as well. It's a beautiful folk rock piece that just sort of wraps itself around you like a blanket, and you just want to curl up in it. And it's a beautiful album. To the Sunset is a very different album from that. There's some stuff on here that's rock. It's a much darker album, I would say, than My Piece of Land, especially lyrically. you want to hear how dark it is lyrically? The last song on the album is called Wasn't I Paying Attention? And the last words that you get on the album, the note she goes out on, is, I'm about to quote a lyric, and all of these lyrics are copyright Amanda Shires. I own no copyright. This is just part of my review. I don't claim ownership of this. She writes, John drove my truck down to the square. He thought he would end it all right there. He took off his coat, doused himself in gas, slit his own throat, climbed back into the cab, and lit the match. That's how the album ends, and that's a dark place to go. People think my songs are depressing. People think I write dark stuff. That she has a guy slitting his throat and lighting himself on fire to end her record. It's a very, very, you, there's a lot to grab onto, I guess, in the lyrics. There's a lot to, it leaves you thinking about a few things, and but that said, there's some really fun stuff on it too. Break Out the Champagne is a really fun song, and has a little moment in it that is sort of, oh, that's what Shania Twain would be like if I actually liked her. she has that kind of moment in there, because there's just sort of a little pause where she sort of has a joke in there. I won't spoil it for you in case you ever listen to it, but it's a funny little pause, and it reminiscent of that Don't Impress Me Much kind of feel. Although I don't think she was going for that, but it was clearly just it was clearly in that same vein of idea, and it was funny, and it was charming in the way that Amanda Shires is charming. But yeah, that was my thought when I heard it. I went, oh, that's what it would be like if I liked Shania Twain. And the album's full of fun stuff. The album's Parking Lot Pirouette is a great song that opens it. Eve's Daughter is a good song too. Mirror Mirror's good. The whole freaking album is good. It's very different from what I've come to sort of expect from her. I was expecting a little bit softer of a listen because there are some real rock pieces on this album. But that's welcome. It shows her versatility really well, and it's a fun listen, and it's a moving listen, and it's a dark listen in places, and I'm very impressed by her writing on this album. Her writing, she's always written good songs, but this is some next level good from her, and I like To the Sunset quite a bit. I will say I haven't actually received the album yet. I got a digital download of it because I had pre-ordered. The album is had a manufacturing problem and is not in anybody's hands yet that did the pre-order of the purple marble vinyl and the print and stuff. If you got the black vinyl, you have it. But those of us who ordered the special edition and stuff didn't. It's still pending. Because with the manufacturing error, they then have to get that fixed and then get it in and then make sure it's right. And then it goes to Amanda, Jason, and Dave Cobb for autographing. And that's going to take a little bit of time because I know Isbell's touring right now. I'm looking forward to seeing him next month, September the 10th, with my friend Amanda. Hi, Amanda. If you listen to the show, you probably don't. I know you're busy. So the thing that the pre-order has been a little bit delayed, but unlike Loot Crate, Amanda Shires and her people did the right thing. They sent out a message and said, hey, here's the deal. Please bear with us. Give us a little bit of time to get it corrected. Here's a free download of the album. And it was a day early, so I got to hear the album a day before most people. And that's the way you handle that kind of stuff. You let people know that there's a problem. You do what you can to make it right. You give them a placeholder for the time being until you can make it right. So they're handling it very well. I'm a little disappointed that I don't have it yet. I was hoping to be shopping for a frame for those lyrics by now. But at the same time, I get it. That kind of stuff happens. And I'm not mad. You know, they handled it well, they handled it right, and I still got to listen to an album that I like a lot. How much do I like it? I like it so much that I also went out and bought it on CD anyway. So I've got a physical copy anyway, even though I've got the purple marble on its way to my house. So that probably should tell you something. It's the record So Nice I Bought It Twice. Amanda Shires, To the Sunset. One of the best things you're going to hear this year. Go out and pick it up or download it or whatever you do, but just make sure you pay for it, and you can thank me for it later. Amanda Shires, To the Sunset, great album. You gotta hear it.
Standing in the cold, searching for something. It could be anything. The smell of mildew and her cheap perfume. This could be.
Last week, for want of other things to talk about, I talked about a guitar and a bass that I own, and I had fun doing that. So I want to do that some more. I may spend just a few weeks and maybe do a guitar a week for a little while. So I wanted to do that on this episode too, and I knew by the time I was uploading last week's episode what guitar I wanted to talk about this week, and it's my green Ibanez Soundgear bass. It's a bass that I've had for 22 years, and in that time it has accompanied me to every gig that I've played bass on since that time. It doesn't always see the lights. Sometimes it stays in the case for the night. It doesn't always get played, but it's come with me, at least, to every gig. Because I love that bass. It's treated me well. I've treated it like crap. But it's held up. It's been a real road warrior for me. And I've made little neck adjustments here and there, and I've actually, it's not got the stock bridge on it. The bridge that I put on there is a Badass 2 bass bridge. I think made by Fender. I might be wrong about that, but it's a badass tube bridge, and I'll zoom in on a picture when I put it on the blog over at emptychecking.blogspot.com. I've used it a lot. It's been my main instrument for 22 years as a bass player. It's been a great companion over all that time. There are probably 100 stories I could share about it. It's worth noting that there's a West Ham United decal on the front of it, strictly because I'm an Iron Maiden fan, and Steve Harris has one on his bass, so it went on mine. It's been in churches, it's been in CD bars, it's been in people's backyards for picnics. It's been carted across state lines, across multiple state lines. It's a real versatile bass. I can get a lot of sounds out of it, and it's been reliable. I've been playing my Rickenbacker more here in recent years because it's a Rickenbacker and it costs a lot of money and you play it. But the Ibanez Sound Gear is just one of those trustworthy brands that if you've ever owned one, you own it for 20 some odd years and you keep playing it. I've got a chili pepper bass strap on it because I like hot peppers. I was looking for a habanero-themed strap, but that doesn't exist, so I've just got red chilies. The way it came into my hands was in 1996, my 16th birthday. Some 16-year-olds get a car that they can drive around and that their parents think, well, I can make them get groceries. Some 16-year-olds get a car. I got a new bass. I'm not... I am a little bit hazy, actually, on exactly how that came about, other than I know that I was taking lessons over at Dale's Music in Hazelwood at the time, and I know that I had shown it to my dad and told him that that was the one I wanted. I don't know that I really expected to get it. I know that Dad with... we were over at my grandma's place for my birthday that year for whatever reason, and I know that Dad did the old gimme gimme gotcha of my grandparents got me a new bass case because my old case was falling apart. Like, I still have that case, and you can actually just pull the front right off of it and slide the bass out without unlatching it. So I needed a case, and they got me the case, and then Dad, you know, came in from another room and said, here, see if this fits in it. Which is a move my dad would pull, but it came into my life on my 16th birthday, and I'm 38 now, so it's been 22 years of playing that bass. And I have played it on everything I've done that's a recorded project, absolutely everything that I've released, at least under my name, I've used that bass. Now, on the last album, on It Could Be Worse. I forgot my own album name there. On It Could Be Worse, I mainly used the Rickenbacker, but I still broke out the sound gear for a thing here and there. I did not keep very good notes during the process of that recording session, so I don't remember which songs I used it on, but I know that I did. And I'm sure I'll use it on my next project, too. It's got wonderful harmonic response. There's some tweaking and some compressing I've done to where I get kind of a Ent Whistle meets Lemmy sound in some ways out of that thing. I really like playing it. It's one of those things, like playing the Rickenbacker. The Rickenbacker is reasonably easy to play. It plays smoothly, it plays clearly, it sounds great. It doesn't really have a good place to rest your thumb on your right hand, so that's a little bit of a problem. I've developed some like thumb pain in the past from how I've played that over like a 3-hour set or something, but the Rickenbacker looks good, it sounds good, it plays good, but when I put on the sound gear, that feels like home. That feels right. It feels like the bass that I should be playing, and that's I can't say that about every guitar in my arsenal, but I can say that about the sound gear. Other than the bridge, I've really not done anything to it post-factory. I put on the new bridge because I wanted to pull some harmonics out of like the third fret that you normally can't get out of a standard bridge. and the badass bridges just help with that. But by and large, I've not had to do anything to that bass. I think I replaced the output jack once, and that's it. That thing otherwise is completely out of the shop the way it was. I put on a new bridge because I wanted that bridge on there. I'm a little bit surprised I haven't put that bridge on other basses, to be honest with you. I like that bridge quite a bit. But it's a cool bass, it's got plenty of knobs to turn, and it's been super reliable for over 20 years, and that speaks for itself. So I just wanted to give it its due. The Ibanez Sound Gear, the green one, it has a name, but I won't tell you what it is. It's personal. I'm not often in the habit of naming my guitars, but I've named a couple of them. I didn't say in last week's show. I mentioned that I call the Silvertone that I play Junior, but I didn't mention that my purple bass is actually named Laverne, and there's a stupid reason for that. Because when we were in the band I was in as a teenager, Union Jack, when we were in that band, Mark, the guitar player, bought a Telecaster, or got a Telecaster. I don't remember if it was a gift or if he bought it or what, but he acquired a Telecaster, and Telecasters are cool guitars. I've got a Tele myself. He, as you do, kept referring to it as his Tele, kept saying Tele. And so I just jokingly started calling my bass Laverne, so it was Laverne and Telly, and it kind of sounded like Laverne and Shirley. I was 14. It was the best I could do for jokes. So the purple bass is sort of sarcastically named Laverne, but it's stuck. The green one does have a name. I won't say what it is, because that's just for me to know. Some things have to remain a mystery. Sorry, folks. But I do love playing it, and I've played it consistently, and I've played it regularly, and it's been by my side through many a trial and through many a hardship and many a problem. Because I'm one of those musicians who, when I'm going through something, I've got to play something. And when I'm going through particularly hard things, I end up playing a bass because I can kind of dig into them a little bit more. It feels like I'm doing something. And that bass has been knocked around a little in the past, but it keeps coming back for more. So I hope everybody enjoyed this loving tribute to my Soundgear bass. Go to the blog, look at the pictures of it, look at the pictures of all the stuff I'm going to put on the blog. It would mean a lot to me if you knew what this stuff looked like rather than just hearing me talk about that I have it. What's the point in talking about it if you can't show it off a little too? Go check out the pictures at emptychecking.blogspot.com. Let's do a little bit more music and then we'll talk about some TV. How about that? We'll talk about TV next after this. So I've been sitting in front of the TV a little bit lately, and I've seen some stuff worth talking about, and I've seen some stuff not worth talking about. So I'm not going to talk about the stuff that's not worth talking about, which is some of the wrestling, frankly. Although this past week's show, you know, I'm just going to do the wrestling up front. I was thinking I'd save it for last, but I'm not going to go too into detail. Honestly, SmackDown, I kind of tuned out a lot. It wasn't on purpose. I was doing other stuff, and I sort of feel like I missed SmackDown, although when someone on the internet was talking about it, I did say, oh yeah, I remember seeing that part. So I don't have a lot to say about SmackDown, although I am looking forward to the AJ Styles Samoa Joe match at SummerSlam. Raw, I enjoyed quite a bit. There was a lot of fun stuff. I just enjoyed, I enjoyed the show pretty much from front to back. I had fun. The Rousey match at the end was just kind of a showcase, I guess, of Rousey. No one thought that Alicia Fox was going to put up any kind of struggle, but it was fun to watch Rousey do stuff. She looked good. She had a good presence. It was fun. It was short. It was to the point. I don't I don't know how much it helps build toward the pay-per-view, though, because we really have no reason to suspect that Rousey's going to do anything but walk out of the pay-per-view with the title, because Alexa's not really done anything to make us think that she has a chance of winning. So I'm expecting to see a new champion at the end of SummerSlam in the women's match, but regardless, I like Rousey. I like Alexa too, but I like Rousey, so I'm not opposed to that. But the thing that is on everybody's lips coming out of that is Paul Heyman's promo. Paul Heyman did a pre-record segment with, I believe it was Renee Young interviewing him. If it wasn't Renee, it was the other person. Paul was so good in that segment, I can't remember who interviewed him. But he did a pre-record where he was just kind of asked questions about the fact that Brock Lesnar sort of manhandled him the previous week. And do you still consider yourself and Brock friends? Have you heard from Brock? Do you think Brock's, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Heyman was great. He's a gifted, he's always been a gifted speaker. I had no idea he was such a gifted actor. Because he looked like a kid who just got his puppy kicked. I mean, he looked devastated. He looked heartbroken. He looked like he had lost a close friend and was being forced to talk about it in front of millions of people. He pulled that off really well. There were tears coming out of his eyes, and I don't think that he had an onion in his pocket. I think that was just method. I think he just went there emotionally. Mind-blowing. Great stuff from Paul, and it left me wondering what's going to happen at the pay-per-view, because he still sold it as, you know, Brock's going to win this thing. There's no way that with Brock in the mindset that he's in, there's no way that Roman Reigns is walking out winning. I've been watching wrestling long enough to smell a swerve coming there somehow. Either Paul helps Roman win at the pay-per-view, or it all turns out to have been an act and he helps Brock win. But here's the thing. He did such a good job with the promo that I honestly don't know which way it's gonna go. So I'm looking forward to seeing that match, and I didn't think I would be, but I'm looking forward to seeing that match at SummerSlam. I'm not looking forward to the fact that the second that the match starts, the audience is going to start booing and trying to take over the show the way that WWE audiences think they're entitled to do. Being a good audience is part of the show, and the show has to be more important than you if you're in a live audience. I'm sorry, but I've been very disappointed with the WWE pay-per-view audiences. They're terrible, and not all of that can be put on the WWE for producing content that they don't like. There's some personal responsibility there too. So I'm not looking forward to what I'm sure the audience response is going to be. But I am looking forward to the match, and I'm looking forward to the angle, and I'm looking forward to the story. And I don't think I could have said that even a week ago. Paul Heyman's delivery in that sort of promo, I guess, that backstage segment, sold it for me. Let's do this thing. Let's see it next week. You know, it was really well done. Otherwise, the shows were fine, but those were the main talking points I wanted to hit. In other TV stuff, I've been rewatching the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. I've been rewatching that. There's a season out that I haven't seen, a relatively new season, a recent season, I guess you could say. It came out on Netflix. I haven't watched it yet. I'm first going back through and just rewatching some key points from previous seasons, because the one that's freshest in my mind, the one that I remember the most clearly, is the first season, because the first season was a breath of fresh air. In a time where most TV shows were either coasting or were wrapping up, because like things like The Office had recently ended, 30 Rock had recently ended, and in a time where things were kind of either closing up shop or you've got shows that are surviving on vapors, looking at you, Modern Family, In that day and age, the first season of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt was a breath of fresh air. It was lightning from a blue sky. It was just wonderful and hilarious and smart and funny in a way that nothing else was. And Ellie Kemper's from St. Louis. That helps because I'm from St. Louis, so I'm interested in her career. So the first season is just imprinted on my brain. I loved that first season. The second season I remember okay, but I've been watching some key points from it. I barely remember the third season at all. So I've been just refreshing my memory on some things. I've watched a couple of key points that I just wanted to watch again from the first season. I actually just wrapped up rewatching a couple of the last episodes of the second season. I'm going to watch the third season in its entirety, and then I'll watch the fourth season in its entirety, and I'll report back to you. But I'll tell you this, I've really been enjoying reliving the stuff that I've already seen that I do remember, and just the refresher course that I've been getting over the past couple of weeks. It's a great show, and it's full of laughs, and I don't remember the third season. I kind of know why, though, because I was not in a great place when the third season was airing, so I just, some of what was going on in my personal life, I forgot the goofy comedy that I watched. I didn't retain it, you know, so that's not really the show's fault, although I do feel like this show has sort of a limited lifespan. There's only so long that the concept lasts. And we're kind of reaching that point. And the show knows it, so that's okay. It's okay if we all figure that out at the same time. As long as they know when to walk away, then we will keep watching until they do, you know. But I'm looking forward to re-seeing the third season and seeing how much of it I remember at all. And then I'm looking forward to seeing the first season for the first time, and I'll give you a full report then, but it's just kind of fun to be back in that world and back in that goofy, weird landscape. And I forget how insanely funny Titus Andromedon is. Stereotype or not, insanely funny. Although I'll tell you this, in the first season, I was deeply invested in the relationship between Titus and the construction worker guy, whose name I can't remember right now. They played that really well, and it was really entertaining. A stereotype, not a stereotype. A stereotype can sometimes still be healthy. So I like that character a lot, and I've enjoyed his arc. So this is barely a review. It's a review of something that most of you have already seen, and I've already seen, and that I have a hazy memory of in some ways. So I don't know if this counts, but there you go. What I do have a clearer memory of, and I better because I just watched it a couple of days ago, is the new episode of The Venture Brothers that aired this past Sunday. Spoilers for those of you who love The Venture Brothers as much as I do. You can just skip to the next part. This is all I'm talking about for the remainder of the TV section. I am a huge Venture Brothers fan. We're on season 7 now. I have seasons 1 through 6 on DVD and Blu-ray combined. And I have watched that show, and I've rewatched that show. I've listened to the commentaries. I've read the live journal of one of the creators pretty regularly, when at least back when he was writing it. He's not so much doing that anymore. I've gotten invested in those guys' career. I know their process well enough that I understand why it will sometimes take them years before they put out a new season. Because it boils down to, other shows have a team of writers. That show has those two guys. Jackson Publick, aka Chris McCulloch, and Eric, quote-unquote, Doc Hammer. Those are the guys writing the whole thing. It's hard to coordinate that between just two guys, and for two guys to produce a season of work on a show and then come back and also do voices on it, and Doc occasionally does some of the animation on it. Those guys have a deep investment in this show that it just takes time. And as a fan, I greatly appreciate that time because it's one of the shows that's made me laugh the hardest and that has caused the most intrigue in my watching in the past 10 years. And this week's episode was no different. We open up on the current Venture Brothers compound, I guess, or apartment in New York, and things are amiss. And you got Hank dealing with his new girlfriend and all the woes that come with her dad being a crime boss. You got crazy stuff happening with just about anybody. But the core of this episode was focusing on a mysterious computer system called Problem, which is spelled problem, that is being kept in the Venture compound. I'm going to say compound. That's the wrong word for it, but I'm going to keep saying that. It's being kept in the Venture compound, and it's very sort of HAL from 2001 looking, and it's causing problems, and it's taking over computer systems, and it's doing weird psychic kinetic energy stuff, and it's creeping everybody out. Brock won't even sleep in his own bedroom. He's afraid to go in there. It's I believe it was Hank offered the line, "It's scary, Brock, scary," and it's got that sort of weird anticipation that a Venture Brothers episode can provide. And I won't do the big spoiler at the end. I won't tell you what it was revealed that it is, or at least probably is, but I am going to touch on some just sort of core things that longtime obsessive fans of the show are probably glad that they saw. Great to see the return of Dr. Orpheus. I've missed Dr. Orpheus and the Order of the Triad. Nice to have them back in this world. It's, they were not there in season 6 at all. They didn't show up because it wasn't really, they didn't have a foot in that world. There wasn't, they were dealing with being in New York and city-type atmosphere, and just none of the stories they did in season 6 really loaned themselves to a weird magic guy. And it's kind of nice that they came right out of the barrel on this one with, here's a Dr. Orpheus story. And that made me really happy. I was really glad to see that. It was a lot of fun. They got in another Sharky's Machine reference. They have referenced Sharky's Machine in the past, I believe in the Ghost of the Sargasso episode, I think it was. They referenced that. It was the Gargantua episode. They referenced that they were playing Sharky's Machine when a bunch of guys got killed. So they, again, referenced Sharky's Machine, which was actually probably a pretty strong clue as to the origin of Problem. Huh, that just occurred to me. But it's just kind of fun to see them ticking on core stuff and to have Pete White and Billy there and Brock being Brock and the cool kind of almost throwaway scene with the Monarch toward the end that's going to lead into next week's episode. Just a fun episode. If you've been a fan of the show for as long as I've been, because I got in on season 1 of that thing. It was the Ghost of the Sargasso episode that got me, because I knew it was a light Johnny Quest parody. That's what I thought it was. And I don't remember what made me watch it, but for some reason I watched the Ghost of the Sargasso episode, which was when the show was in more of a Monster of the Week type format, but not really Monster of the Week. It was the ghost of a guy, the sort of decomposing skeleton of a guy who had died in a plane experiment that was run by the original Dr. Venture back years and years ago, and it was the ghost of that guy haunting the current Ventures, and except he wasn't really doing anything. He just had lit up green smoky eyes and was just screaming a lot, but he didn't really seem to want anything. He was just screaming a lot, which that in and of itself was funny enough, but what really got me, what hooked me into the show, was in the opening moments of that episode, they recite virtually all of Space Oddity, because the guy's called Major Tom, and they reference Ashes to Ashes, and they reference Space Oddity, and at one point Dr. Venture is trying to get Major Tom on the radio. Ground control to Major Tom, your circuit's dead. there's something wrong. Can you hear me, Major Tom? And it just, I was just in. I was like, okay, these guys love David Bowie as much as I do. I'm watching the rest of this episode, and that's turned into 7 seasons of watching the Venture Brothers. And this last episode just kind of ticked all the boxes for someone who's been watching it that long and just wants those guys to have fun getting their Sharky's Machine reference in. So far, season 7 of The Venture Brothers is a big win for me, and it's only one episode in. I can't wait until Sunday night to see episode 2. I love this show, and I'm so glad it's back. It makes me so happy to watch it. This probably won't be the best place to come in if you've never seen the show before, because there's just stuff you gotta know to watch The Venture Brothers once you're this deep into it. They're making a show for an audience that's been there for a long time. They're not making easy jump on points anymore. But you can find the show. It's on DVD. It's on Blu-ray. I'm sure it streams on something. Go check out The Venture Brothers. Start at season 1. You'll thank me. It's just a great show. And I'm having so much fun having it back. It's great to have it back. And if you've never been a fan of the show, I encourage you to become a fan of the show. If you need to, I can loan out my DVDs. So that does it for TV. Let's do a little bit more music, and then we'll get out of here. We'll do a wrap up and get out of here. Here's something.
Still got the photograph.
It occurred to me over the last week that on the blog, I should really be putting links in the blog to the songs that I'm playing on the Bandcamp page, so you can just go right to that song. I should put those links in the time breakdown that I do on the blog, because that maybe you want to download that song, but you don't know where to click. It's all on derekbrink.bandcamp.com. You can go there, but just in case you have trouble figuring out which album to go to, I'm going to start putting links in the posts to the songs that I'm using. So look for that on emptychecking.blogspot.com. It's the blog's worth your time, I think. You get to see pictures and stuff. There'll be plenty of pictures to look at this week. I'm going to take some pictures. As I said in the intro, this episode might go up a little bit late. I apologize if it did. By now you know. I don't, but by now you know. And I apologize if it does go up a little bit late. So, something coming up in the very near future. There's actually two things coming up in the very near future. Thing one is that on the 12th of this month, August the 12th, 2018, this podcast that you're listening to right now, Empty Checking, will turn 1 year old, at least under the new launch. It'll be 1 year old on the 12th, and that's a Sunday. I normally don't post episodes on the Sunday, but who knows, maybe I'll post a little something this week if I can get something together. In case I don't, thanks for a great year. It's been a lot of fun for me doing this, and I'm looking forward to doing it for another year. And it's just kind of cool. I didn't know how long I'd be doing this. I didn't know how much fun I'd be having doing this. I just knew that I wanted to do it, and it's been a very rewarding year for me. And I've really enjoyed doing it, and I've enjoyed talking to people about this stuff and whatnot, and communicating with others and. I've just enjoyed doing this. So thank you so much for putting up with me for a year. It's been a lot, and thanks for interacting with me about the show. One such interaction, and this is the other thing that's coming up pretty soon. To those who I owe money for other things, don't worry, I'm going to pay you. I am about to say something that could piss off some people that I actually owe a couple of bucks, but this is happening. Through this show, I've mentioned a couple of times that I wanted to pick up a Strymon Mobius pedal, which is a modulation pedal, has chorus and flangers and stuff like that in it. Those effects that if they're used tastefully, you don't notice them, but they can also be used as big over-the-top, hey, listen to me, I'm an effect type effects, and I like both of those things. Strymon makes really cool stuff, and the Mobius I've had my eye on to replace my old Line 6 modulation unit. And through this show, I was contacted by somebody who has one that they're not going to use that's new in box. I'm not going to name names. I'm not going to tell you how they got it, but they're giving it to me for a really good deal. They just kind of said, hey, I've had this sitting. I'm not going to use it. I'll sell it to you for blank if you want it. And there, it was the kind of number that I couldn't turn down because it's easy enough to find out what these things go for. You just go to Strymon's website. These things sell for $450, and that wasn't going to happen. So it was the kind of number that I could not pass up. So I'm making that arrangement, and the Strymon Mobius will be coming into my life and going onto my board, and I'm very excited about that. And I probably won't subject you to a long me demoing a pedal thing like I did with the Mel 9 pedal several episodes ago, but maybe a little something here or there if I find something really cool on it. I'm excited for that thing to come into my life, and that's the kind of thing that's been happening as a result of this show. Somebody just reached out to me and said, hey, I've got a thing you want. Would you like it? And so now that's happening because people are nice, and this show's reaching people who are nice, and that's pretty cool. So I sincerely want to say thank you to folks, because I'll tell you the truth, I didn't even look at the download numbers. I don't care to know what the download numbers are or the streaming numbers. I don't look because it's either going to be so small that I'll feel disappointed and disheartened and won't want to do it anymore, or it'll be large enough that I'll feel overwhelmed and scared. And so I don't want either of those emotions, so I don't even look at the download numbers. It's emails or comments in person that I get that let me know that this thing's doing anything at all, and that particular interaction is going to be very beneficial for me. So it's thanks a lot is what I'm getting at. Thanks a lot for listening, and for those of you who've reached out, and those of you who've talked to me in person and stuff. It means a lot when people do that. So thanks a lot. It's been a great year for me. If I post something on Sunday, I'll go into maybe more detail about some of the fun I've had over the past year. If I don't, please know that I wanted to, but I just ran out of time. And it really does mean a lot that I've gotten to do this for a year. So we'll keep doing it. We'll do another show next week, probably, unless something goes wrong. Because I'm a one-man operation and anything could happen. But I intend to do another show next week, and we'll start year two next week. So, as it goes, you've been checking us out this long, so check us out next time. Thanks a lot. Talk to you then. Go, Team Venture!